the Board of Supervisors to order. We'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you very much.
All righty, do we have an adoption of the agenda?
No additions from you, Mr. Chair.
How's it going? Whoa, wait a second. Who's that? Where's that voice?
Your hair's cut off.
Hey, Mr. Shaw, no additions? I can't believe it.
Slide back a little bit there.
All righty, so I've got a motion made by Mr. O'Brien, and do I have a second?
Yes.
Mr. Weaver seconded it. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We've adopted the agenda. And Mr. Dahl.
Mr. Chair, very nice to see everyone, although remotely. And the reason because of that is I had to quarantine about a week ago, and I was confirmed COVID positive this past Saturday. So I'm doing the appropriate smart thing. I'm quarantining at home to stay, keep others safe. But like I said, I'm in a lot better shape today than I was over the weekend. Like I said, I'm glad to be here, and like I said, I'll be happy to see people in person.
Well, glad you're feeling better.
Yeah, just a few things to report on. So one, we have a few new employees in the communications in E911. We have Portasha Wilkins. She started as a communications officer on August 30th. Owen Peterson, also a communications officer, also started on August 30th. And then Devin Max, he also started as a communications officer on August 30th. Our spotlight on business, so Spire Collected, they were named the prestigious Inc.'s 5,000 fastest growing private companies for 2021. Again, another from Cluvana company. Spire Collective is a parent company for e-commerce companies Storyboard.com and TealTriangle.com. Storyboard.com, they started, it was probably about, I want to say, 2-3 years ago. And they provide storage products for recreational goods. And then TealTriangle.com will also be a direct-to-consumer website slated to launch this month. They're located up in Zion's Crossroads at the Starlight Business Park, and it's a great business to have in Cluvana County. Just some changes that we have going on at Parks and Rec. Parks and Rec staff installed 4 speed bumps throughout the park on Tuesday, August 31st. That main road kind of going between the Pleasant Grove House, the Farm Heritage Museum, and going back to the pole barn. Some people get a little quick through there sometimes. So just we have people walking around. This is just a better way to make the park safe and make the area around there, as it's a pedestrian area, just provide for some better safety for those that are in the park. Talking about COVID testing, so at the Fluvanna County Health Department, basically up in the parking lot right in front of the courthouse in the county admin building, every Wednesday evening from 5 to 7 p.m., they're doing walk-up appointments. Anyone from age 2 and older, and I can personally tell you it was a quick and easy process. You can be in and out of there in probably about 15 minutes at tops. So again, every Wednesday, the Fluvanna Health Department is doing free COVID testing. And in addition, the Blue Ridge Health District is also doing, at the health department there, right in the county admin building, they are doing vaccination clinics. Masks are required to enter the health department. And those are occurring from 9:30 to 11:30 on Wednesdays, and then also from 1:30 to 3:30 on Wednesdays. They have both appointments and walk-ups are available. And for any information, you can call the Blue Ridge Health District hotline at 434-972-6261. Also, they have Sunday, September 12th, 2021. They're doing in the village, there's going to be a fall into the village, kind of a Palmyra outdoor art market happening in the village. During that event also, VDH is also going to be their Blue Ridge Health District doing a shot on the spot. They'll be doing vaccinations right there during the Palmyra Outdoor Art Market during September 12, 2021. And certainly for more information on where you can get vaccinations, go to blueridgehd.org. Just a few changes for some meetings coming up. Nothing changing with meeting dates. But just one thing to note is we are changing the meeting location for upcoming meetings for the second meeting in September and our meetings for October for sure. We're going to be doing those meetings at the Carysburg Performing Arts Center. So your next meeting, September 15th at 7 p.m., will be at the Carysburg Performing Arts Center. October 6th at 4 p.m., Carysburg Performing Arts Center, and then Wednesday, October 20th at 7 p.m. will be at the Carysburg Performing Arts Center. And it's a little bit of a twofold thing. One, and let me just say this too, the Planning Commission meeting also on September 14th is also going to be at the Carysburg Performing Arts Center. If you remember from our last meeting, we had comments regarding Village Gardens. The Planning Commission is going to be hearing that particular item on the agenda that evening. So the one, Carysburg Performing Arts Center provides for a little more flexibility for spacing and for those wanting to attend the meeting. But again, we'll be there. And then, like I said, Ms. Hoffman has some big book sales where that room that you're in right now is going to look like a library here before you know it. And just with some of these larger meetings coming up, I think the Carysburg Performing Arts Center will be a good transition for us for the interim, and we'll see how things go from there. But from that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions the board has.
Any questions?
Thank you very much.
And just for the record, Mr. Dahl, you have a breakthrough COVID case, correct?
I'm sorry?
You have a breakthrough COVID case, right?
I do, correct. I am fully vaccinated.
Thank you.
All righty, next up, special presentation, 2021 VACO Achievement Award presented to the Flavanna County Library, Jeremy Bennett, VACO Director of Intergovernmental Affairs.
So, Mr. Chair, like I said, this is a 2021 VACO Achievement Award, and I'm going to put Ms. Harris on the spot very, very briefly. I'll give her much-deserved credit on this. VACO does Achievement Awards every year, and Ms. Harris, just looking around, looking at different departments, what we're doing, submitted to for the library and Parks and Rec. So, Ms. Harris, do you want to talk a little bit about the Achievement Awards, and then we can hand it over to Mr. Bennett. And Mr. Bennett, thank you for being here this evening for this special presentation.
Well, I didn't particularly want to, but...
why don't you talk a little bit about what was submitted?
So I think every employee of Flavanna County did an absolute rock star job of the last 18 months. When we got the invitation to highlight the good works employees have done from VACO, I immediately thought of Parks and Rec. They sort of just spun themselves all around and found ways to stay employed as much as anything, and different really out of the box ways of offering programming and keeping kids active more than anything. And that very quickly followed looking at what the library had done. So we wanted to highlight customer service for the library and then Parks and Rec. And honestly, Parks and Rec really should have got it, but Nelson County had this daggone tunnel that they did, so we really couldn't compete with the tunnel. So I like to say every single time, Flavanna County Parks and Rec is really a winner because they really went above and beyond. We just don't have a tunnel or a mountain to compete with. But the library just really allowed their patrons to still be active, still be involved, still get all of the services that they were receiving before COVID in a way that was just, I thought, really inspiring. So anyway, I wrote them up. Send them in, and Jeremy Bennett is here to present the library's award.
Thank you, Kelly.
being a resident of Louisa County, I'm blessed to be in Flavanna County.
Me too.
Yes, and to know that whether it's Nelson, Louisa, or Flavanna, there are winners all around this region, and it's truly a blessing to live here and to recognize their achievements. So, Mr. Chair, Administrator Dahl, members of the board, as said, I'm Jeremy Bennett, NACO Director of Intergovernmental Affairs. It is a pleasure to be here. I just saw Mr. Chair at the NACO County Official Summit, where, as you're all aware, he is a member of the NACO Board of Directors, and it's a pleasure to see him and everyone else. It is my distinct privilege to present the NACO Achievement Awards to Flavanna County. And for the benefit of your constituents who may not be familiar with the Virginia Association of Counties, NACO has existed since 1934 to serve and support your efforts as county officials. We support counties in many ways. First is through our advocacy efforts in the state legislature and also the federal government. We also serve counties through our educational programs, member services, and communication efforts. In 2003, we established our Achievement Award program to recognize counties that have adopted innovative approaches to providing public services and identifying programs that could serve as models for other counties. Today, I'm proud to present your county with an Achievement Award. This is our 19th annual Achievement Award program. In 2021, we received 102 entries, and 30 winners were selected from 19 counties. This is truly competitive, as about only 29% of entries were selected as winners. Flavanna County's won 2 Achievement Awards, this is the second. The first Achievement Award was won in 2015 for a program titled Pleasant Grove Meadow Management. And I love the Pleasant Grove Park, it's always great to visit. So, Ted Povar, our retired Associate Director of the Virginia's Institute of Government, Dr. Shirley Bailey, Visiting Professor of Practice at Virginia Tech and former Chesterfield County Deputy and County Administrator, and Larry Land, retired NACO Director of Policy Development, served as judges for this year's statewide competitive awards. They did a great job. I'd like to thank them for their time, dedication, and enthusiasm. There were several criteria our judges followed as for the guidelines of the program. Does the program offer an innovative solution or to a problem, situation, or delivery of services? Does the program promote intergovernmental cooperation or cooperation with local, state, or federal entities? Does the program provide a model that other local governments may learn from or implement in their own communities? And is the program based on programs from another public or private entity but represents an innovative approach for customization by local government? And of course, the judges use their own discretion and instincts in making their final decisions. And to quote Ted Povar, one of the judges who served as a judge since the inception of the program in 2003, quote, I continue to be inspired by the good work done by Virginia's counties. Year after year, counties prove the Achievement Awards are a treasure trove of ideas and innovation. And as I said, I'm here to present the actual award. And as Kelly said, the Flavanna County Public Library wanted and needed to continue providing services during the pandemic. Closures because of COVID-19 gave library staff an opportunity to get creative and adapt to the new reality of physical distancing and closures and to fundamentally change how services were provided. In order to keep staff and customers safe, the library implemented curbside delivery, grab-and-go kits, virtual story time, and much more. And it's my understanding that this was done on day one of the closure or immediately after. These programs served as lifelines for children, the elderly, and other members of the Flavanna community during an unprecedented time and served as a model for other local governments. And I think they truly lived up to the mission of the library to serve as a source of information, intellectual development, entertainment, and personal enrichment for the residents of Flavanna County. So VACO would like to, on behalf of VACO, I'd like to congratulate Flavanna County again for its excellent program. And we look forward to your participation in the 2022 Achievement Award. And Mr. Chair, I have the actual award here. And if I could present that to someone and maybe get a few pictures.
We have a picture taker. Jalen, Ms. Elise, come around here. Y'all right there together. Y'all got it.
I think the board as well.
Oh, do you want to get the whole board in here? All right.
Will this be mentioned at the VACO Convention Conference?
Yes,
we'll be
showcasing the achievements of all counties who participated in the program.
Yeah.
I
all that baby stuff.
You can't zoom in?
I can, but then I start losing people on the left and the right. So Weaver, maybe, I don't want to cut you out.
That might be good.
Ha! Bad jokes. There we go. I'm happy with that.
Well, thank you again. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Great job.
I'd like to reiterate, I think everybody did a great job trying to get through this. Still are in the process of getting through it. Next up, we will now open the first round of public comments. Anyone wishing to address the board, please state your name, address. Keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and direct it to the board. Is there anyone wishing to speak at this time?
There does not appear to be.
Okay.
Maybe in the room.
All righty. Seeing none, hearing none, I will now close the first round of public comment. There are no public hearings. We'll move forward with action matters. A, fuzz the Morris Omaha Underwell Rehabilitation Contract, Ms. Tolman.
Good afternoon. This is for the Fuzzy Morris Omaha Underwell Rehabilitation. Can you guys go to the next one? Oh, thank you. Per a signing by the Virginia Department of Health, there are certain things that the county is required to do to improve the Fuzzy Waterwork System. Taking these items into account, the county issued an IFB for the rehabilitation of these two locations. At the Morris plant, we have to do the well rehabilitation and yield and drawdown testing. Rehabilitate the green sand filters and repipe the well house and pump replacement. At Omohundro, we have to do the well rehabilitation and yield and drawdown testing, rehabilitate the green sand filters, and replace the pitless unit and force main to well house. Next page. The county did receive only one bid for the work from Sidner Hydro. Sidner Hydro has been routinely working with the FUSD system, so they are very familiar with both wells and the requirements that the health department has put on us. keep in mind that per the American Rescue Plan Act, this is a project that can be used with that money. And we can either fund it completely with that money, or we can use part of Fort Union Sanitary District's fund balance. At this point, the unaudited fund balance as of June 30th was $164,087. Any questions? It would just be up to you guys to decide how you want to break up those costs and move forward.
My first question would be, I think the fund balance, so Mr. Stevens, when he redid the prices, because what did it, zero or in the red, Mr. Dahl?
Mr. Chairman, as you know, back in almost probably up until 2014, we were on a long record of trying to turn the system around and making it you know, positive with from a fund balance standpoint. We have been inching up year by year to do that. So right now FUSD's fund balance is $164,000. Now, if the board decided that they wanted to use a portion of this, was kind of the discussion last meeting, I certainly would not recommend using all that. And honestly, from my recommendation, just knowing how old the system is, other things that still need to be done in the system, if we can use the American Rescue Plan Act funds for this, I would recommend to use the American Rescue Plan Act funds in the entirety for this. You know, we've got a Dominion project coming up in the southern part of the county that will provide new infrastructure. But remember, that is for new water treatment system, tanks, some pipes for some of the areas that are within the Dominion the territory by the Dominion coal ash plant, but there are lots and lots of miles of pipes in the Fuzzy area that are just that are going to be replaced at some point.
Right. I agree.
And so my recommendation is to use ARPA total.
All right, are there any comments, questions from anyone?
That's the person.
Mr. Weaver?
No, but if we can avoid using our funds, I think that's a good deal for us.
Yeah, if we can use the funds for that, then we can come back and make sure that we have that in our pocket when we need it.
We need to keep funds. I guess I'm cut off here. I need to get closer to the mic. I don't think we should use the $100,000 for the reasons that Eric just said. That was the first thing I thought when I read the board packet. If we have this amount of money, we should use all of it for the rehabilitation of those who are the Morrison of 100 well and keep that money in the county and Fuzzy's proper.
Okay, Mr. Dahl.
Yeah, just one thing, Mr. Chair. Just looking at the motion here, so I know it's a little complicated, but the two bullets there. So the first one is if the board says we want to use the entire $290,250, then you just read the motion and put $290,250 in the blank there. And the second bullet, we don't even address it at all, because that's only if we plan on using any Fuzzy funds.
So all right.
The balance on the ARPA fund, is it 2.6 million?
It's 2.6 million right now, and remember, we're going to get another 2.6 million. So just to kind of give you a little overview. So 2.6 million right now. You already approved. It's just roughly under $40,000 for some the FUMA wastewater treatment plant evaluation. Remember, the board is moving forward with the resolution and the VADI application for CDEC, and the required match for that was $600,000. So if the board approves this at 290, let's just call it between those three items, it'll probably be roughly under $150,000 that the board has allocated or so far out of the 2.6 million that we've received far, and we'll receive another 2.6 million in about July here, and then we have the funds to utilize and spend until December 31st, 2024.
Yes, ma'am, if you're ready to make a motion.
I'm not the board of supervisors. Approved funding for the Fuzzy Morris and Omahundra Well Rehabilitation Project as follows. A budget transfer of $290,250 from the FY22 Act, American Rescue Plan Act Contingency Line, to the FY22 American Rescue Plan Act Contract Services Line.
Second. Got a motion made by Ms. Eager and seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Next, B, resolution.
There is one more motion.
I can't do a second for the contract. My fault. Do I have a motion for this one?
I move the, we need to move these TVs back to the next time. I move the Board of Supervisors approve the contract between Fluvanna County and Signal Hydro Incorporation for the Fourth Union Sanitary District Morrison 100 Well Rehabilitation in the amount of $290,250, and further authorize the county administrator to execute the agreement subject to approval as to form by the county attorney.
Second. Motion made by Ms. Booker and seconded by Ms. Eager. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Now we'll move forward with the bid. Resolution for Transportation Alternatives Program, TAP grant, Mr. Miles.
Yes, good evening, Chairman Sheridan, members of the board. If you remember, before you
back on August 4th, and we did a positive discussion about the TAP grant process. I'm going to just briefly go over the information here. What we're doing tonight is we're in stage two of the TAP grant application and need a resolution from the Board of Supervisors to support us to continue to finish the TAP grant process by October 1st. So again, this Paul Myra Village Streetscape project is part of your strategic initiatives program at C7. So that's the most important part of this slide. The work would be for constructing concrete sidewalks and related concrete curbing along Stone Jail Street, removing the actual road of Court Square, and providing additional on-street parking. We did qualify, worked with VDOT and the VDOT Paul Pepper and Lisa office staff members, and the work would be done mainly on Stone Jail Street and creating Court Square. And just two pictures, showed you many last time. This is the concrete wall area that would be removed with a sidewalk being added. And then this is the road that bisects Court Square currently now. And then, yes, and then as Eric's showing you, that's the road that would be removed and the sidewalk work would be done on Stone Jail Street. And then this is the summary of the TAP grant request for funding for a 20% match that's $268,600. As we told you last time on August 4th, we really think the project will be well under $1 million. But this is the worst case summary scenario from VDOT in their calculations as they get into the project. If this project were funded, there's going to be a lot of cost savings that would be involved. But again, the 20% match would be required.
And Mr. Chair, too, and board members, we don't have to commit or allocate these funds at this point. We would do that once we knew whether or not the grant was approved.
And if the grant is not approved, then this doesn't go forward. Is that correct?
That's correct. If this grant is not approved, then a project does not go forward. This is a VDOT managed project. It's not managed by Fulvana County Public Works. So the VDOT staff and funding right now, in working with them, we found out we're in very good opportunity to receive this grant based on, as I told you before, folks from Charlottesville and Albemarle are not applying for TAP grants. At this point, they're working on larger MPO projects. So
we don't have that 268,600 in our budget though yet, do we?
No, Mr.
No, that's correct.
Favor, it's not in the budget, right? So we can do one of two things. You know, if the county gets the grant, the county could decide that they would choose to use fund balance, unassigned fund balance, to fund that project when it becomes due, when we know that we're awarded it. Again, this is a project that's going to take quite some time to move forward on. We could also budget for it during the budget process. Again, they're not anticipating, you know, that this is going to even start construction until, when was it, Douglas?
2025.
Yeah.
So we're looking in several budget years ahead of time, but that's what you have to do with VDOT projects. You have to ask for the money early and often for these type of TAP grant requests. And that's just the schedule. We're just here to ask if the board of resolution would be approved so that we can proceed forward in the final month of the request to complete the TAP grant application.
Are there any questions? Comment?
No.
Okay, do we have a motion?
I move the Savannah County Board of Supervisors adopt the resolution entitled Resolution Supporting the Submission of a Transportation Alternative Program TAP Grant VDOT Funding request for the Phase 1 Palmyra Village Streetscape Project along Stone Jail Street, SR1004, and supports Square in Palmyra, Virginia, with an estimated county 20% match of the $268,600 grant if the grant is approved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, second by Ms. Booker. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. C, advertisement of a public hearing for the issuance of the Virginia Public School Authority Series 2021 bonds. Mr. Dahl.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, again, this is another, we're moving forward with the debt issuance, as the board had indicated, for the for some FY22 school CIP projects. So again, the board approved in the FY22 budget, they approved the budget of $3,771,000 for school CIP projects. Again, for as far as debt funding goes, for school-related projects, VPSA, the Virginia Public School Authority, offers the lowest cost of funds and the most efficient process for financing this. They're also allows some customization with the principal payments. Remember, you know, we have some large debt payments falling off in 2025 and even within the next couple fiscal years too. So they'll allow us to structure this transaction so we can have interest-only payments for the first couple years and then start seeing principal payments once those big debt years fall off. So again, as we discussed, the BPSA application, well, one, the school board did approve to move forward with an application, to submit an application. The VPSA application was submitted on August 30th. With everything going through, at this point, VPSA does allow for bond amounts to be changed, not increased, they can be lowered up until October 4th, 2021. So if there's any final adjustments to amounts, they would need to be considered after the public hearing at the September 15th board meeting. So what you're authorizing tonight is authorization to advertise for a public hearing. Public hearing for the resolution for the debt issuance would be on September 15, 2021. And at that meeting, the board would decide of any other changes if it needs to be lowered. Just a few things on some dollar amounts at this point. So if you remember originally what was approved in the budget, kind of what I prepped and gave the board a little preview for last week, what the board approved in the CIP was $1.5 million for the Carysburg HVAC project, $1.25 million for the Abrams Academy renovation, and then just a little over $1 million for 10 school buses. After talking with Dr. Gretz and looking at some of the quotes and things that were being fine-tuned a little more, I discussed with the board that the quote and some of the estimates for the HVAC project were not adequate, and there needs to be some additional funding to complete that project in the way it needs to be completed for it to be an efficient overall system, whether it's just in the classrooms and in the hallways, you know, to be just one good working system instead of kind of patching in and just doing the classroom HVAC unit at this point. And then also, so discussing that with Dr. Gretz, they are getting some ESSER funds. Those are funds specifically that they can use for certain projects related to some school quality issues, whether it's water, they have some air quality issues that they can utilize those funds for. So Dr. Gretz had discussed with me that they feel that a lot of those project costs, they can utilize the ESSER funds for that, but there are some things within ESSER funds that would not qualify. So we've kind of re-racked and stacked the amounts for all those projects a little bit. The dollar amount is basically the same, though. So unless the board has any you know, hesitation with those changes, you know, I'd be happy to answer any questions on that. And I'm not sure if Dr. Gretz is by chance at the board meeting.
So are you saying for the, let's say, VPSA application that the HVAC replacement is going to be $2,530,000?
And renovation
for Abrams going to be $200,000, or
that's where they can use the ESSER funds.
No, $200,000 is what would be needed from county, from a county contribution. Yes, Dr. Gretz had stated that they can utilize the difference of those, the difference of the $1.2 million and the $200,000 using ESSER funds to do the upgrades to that building. I'm sorry, Ms. Booker.
Okay, I'm just saying about the so the Abrams Academy will cost $1,250,000.
But I don't know if it's going to cost that completely. I mean, again, they don't have an overall scope for all that. It could be less than that. But after they're going through some of their initial estimates of the work, they looked at things that ESSER could be utilized for, and things that they want to do in the building that ESSER funds certainly could not be utilized for, and the things that they could be utilized for works out to the $200,000.
All right, any questions? My only thing would be is, I know we can do the thing where we do the interest payments, but this is where I thought we talked about using fund balance to pay the payments for the first 3 years until the other stuff falls off the books and then we replace it.
So what we would do interest on, you're correct, Mr. Chair. We would do interest-only payments the first 2 years, and we could use fund balance to pay the interest-only payments. And then, again, once the big debt falls off, so it's preserving our fund balance even more.
Yeah, but pushing debt down the road. That's more discussion at a later date.
Well, I mean, again, we could certainly change that.
I mean, because my only thought process on that is it's just more interest that you pay. Although I know we're getting it for a greatly reduced interest rate. Or a very low interest rate.
Yeah, if it was the board's inclination that they think we should pay full toward interest payments for 2 years, you know, we could certainly do that. This was just a way, while some of the projects were being completed, you know, sometimes projects are being completed, you know, you can utilize a mechanism to use some interest-only payments 1 year or 2 years, but if the board wants me to move forward with doing full principal interest payments, we can make that change.
How much were those interest payments to be? I think it was for about 2 years. We were going to use the interest to finance that until we got to the big payment.
Mr. I wish I what was the overall amount for everything that we were talking about, or just for this piece specifically? So when I originally came to the board for the full $20 million, the estimated debt service payment on some really conservative interest rates at $1.6 million a year. We know with some of the delays in getting the debt that we experience that full amount, and we're certainly hoping that, you know, we've got probably about a 1% interest cooked and baked into our estimates for debt service amounts. So we're certainly hoping that the interest rates will come in lower than what we've got estimates in there for. But again, if the board wants me to move forward with a different, structure for these payments, I can certainly discuss that with our financial advisor, and I'll financial advice on the meeting for September 15th.
Leave it like it is. Okay. We're getting head nods to leave it like it is. So.
Okay. And so again, just so the board has some dates for timing. So again, the VPSA application was submitted. The board's going to be considering a a resolution and a public hearing on at their September 15th meeting. You know, October 4th up to October 4th, localities can change the dollar amounts in that BPSA application. And then really, you know, after that, you know, it's really a matter of kind of some motions of, you know, just BPSA and their process and you know, moving forward, closing through November 9th. So that's all I have to the board. I would be happy to answer any questions. Again, this action is to authorize for a public hearing. I apologize, it's to ratify for a public hearing. And just due to the timing of things, we had to get in an advertisement last week. So it would go in the paper this week, which would hit the paper tomorrow. And it's just a little bit of a crunch. So anyway, this is to ratify the authorization for a public hearing. And then certainly at September 15th, the board can make any changes or anything from there.
All right, any questions? Do I have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors ratified the advertisement of a notice of public hearing to be held on September 15th, 2021 for the purpose of financing not to exceed $4 million in BPSA bonds for one, certain capital improvements for the public school system, including without limitation, A, renovations to Avery's Academy, and B, HVAC replacement and related improvements to Carysbrook Elementary School, and two, the acquisition of up to 10 school buses and to pay costs and issuance of the bonds.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Thank you, sir. D, FY22 CIP, Fire and Rescue, additional funding request.
All right. So, Mr. Chair, when we get to the motion, I'll explain this a little bit. There's been a few changes from Mr. Bly, and I think I saw him. Is Mr. Lai in the room here?
Yes, he is.
Okay, all right. Well, I'll go over just a quick presentation, and he can answer any questions, and we can discuss it there. Again, you know, the board members, you received an email from Mr. Bly, and again, he came to talk to the board at the last meeting about requesting additional funding for the apparatus requested for the fiscal year 22 CIP due to price increases. And as Mr. Fly stated, price increases were directly due to raw material price increases and manufacturing price increases, both of which are attributed to COVID-related issues. So the FRA would like to revise the prices and the amounts that were approved move forward with financing for these. So again, engine 20, the original amount approved by the board was 710. FRA is requesting 755. Tanker 10 approved 848. FRA is requesting 495. Attack 20 was 200,000. They're requesting 239. One change that has come up, originally that what was approved was response 5 for Lake Monticello. Lake Monticello was approved for 96,000. And then they were requesting 99,000. After discussing that with Mr. Lai, Mr. Lai came back and discussed that ambulance 554, which was not approved in fiscal year 22, and the current amount, and that's not the current full price. If you remember, I think it's a year and a half ago, and or maybe later, but one of their ambulances was in accident and it was totaled, so they received insurance proceeds. What they want to do is get the difference of the insurance proceeds plus the $100,000 to purchase a new ambulance. So that's the one change. And then again, carbon was approved for $71,000 in the budget, and current price is $74,500. And then the last one is $53,000. It says it was requested at 1.6 and it was approved for 1.3. Currently, the current price to purchase the ladder apparatus that they want to purchase is $1,670,000. So the FRA is requesting an additional $370,000 in addition to the 1.3 that has been approved. So just kind of looking at these items, so this, I think the total of this comes out to $472,000. If the board decided to go forward with this, to approve additional debt issuance for these projects, that would equate to about $55,000, just for your reference, about $55,000 in additional annual debt service. But again, like I said, so the motion, the way it's set up is the board can either approve not to approve any additional amount, approve the amount that they're requesting, or some other amount. And so those are the six pieces of Addis that they're requesting. So again, if the full amount was approved for all those, the total comes out to an additional funding of $472,500. And so if Mr. Lai wants to chime in, or Mr. Chair, if you have any questions for me, I can answer them.
Any questions from anyone?
What is call one?
That's the chief points clerk.
So that's a quick response vehicle that the county fire chief uses to respond. Okay. Happy to answer any questions.
Okay, hearing none. Thank you, Mr. Lai.
Thank you.
Alrighty, folks, do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve additional FY22 Fire and Rescue CIP debt issuance funding for the following apparatus. Engine 20, additional $45,000. Engine 10?
Tanker.
I'm sorry, Tanker 10, additional $11,000. Attack 20, additional $39,000. Ambulance 554, additional $4,000. Car 1, additional $3,500. Tower Ladder 53, additional $370,000. For a total additional funding of $472,500.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, second by Ms. Booker. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. 7A, appointments. E, board, commission, and committee appointments. Ms. Solis.
Mr. Gall, take this. So again, this is an appointment to the Ag Forest District Advisory Council land use position. There was one application in the package and one individual expressing interest, and that's for Overton McGee. And Ms. Solis, can you, I don't remember, is this a reappointment or a new position or a new appointee?
It's for appointment, new position.
Okay. And I can open up if the board's interested.
I move the Board of Supervisors to approve the following board, commission, and committee appointment. Agricultural Forest District Advisory Council land use position, Overton McGee. Begins terms 9/04/2021.
And you got to move a thing, Mr. Dahl.
It's me.
End term 06/30/2025.
Second.
Got a motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mrs. Eager. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Well, kind of looks like a rough gentleman to me, but I think I'll go ahead and say aye. Chairman votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. I'm sorry. I got to give him a hard time. Eight, presentations. F, VDOT quarterly updates, Bethel Capiallo, Alu, operations engineer, and Mr. Saunders, VDOT residency administrator. Bethel, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good evening. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Good evening, Chairman Sherry, members of the board. I'm glad to be back and hope that you've all been well. I'll just be reviewing the changes and updates from our latest monthly report that was released today. To start off just a little bit scrolling down with the smart scale, during the last round, round four, there were two projects in Fluvanna County that were funded. That's the 600-618 Lake Monticello Left Turn Lane, and we actually just had a scoping meeting for that last week, so we're getting started on the preliminary design for that now. And then the other one was 250 and 631 roundabout at Troy Road. And for round five, we're already starting to have conversations about the projects for that, and we'll be getting in touch with the county in the next couple months to review some of those options. And then the pre-application will be due in March, and then we'll just continue with the, those dates and the application deadlines next year. And then scrolling down projects, we've got the Route 656 bridge work that's being worked on right now, and they're expected to be done with that at the end of this month. And then, like I mentioned, with 600-618, we just had our scoping meeting, and so we're getting started on that project right now. If you want to scroll down to like the resurfacing, we shared the list of roads that were going to be resurfaced in the county. I think it's been several months now, but we've just been notified that our contractor is getting started up in Orange County right now, and in the next probably month or two, they're going to be started in Fluvanna County. So we'll make sure to have signs up and message boards before they actually start any work. But I did want to let you know that that will be starting soon. So if you have any questions about that or any of the roads that are on the resurfacing list, please reach out and let us know about that. And with traffic engineering, we're still working on the Route 250 speed study, as well as the Route 616 corridor safety study. And our traffic engineers recently started working on a speed study on Diamond Road, Route 676. We've also been having conversations with Lake Monticello about signs directing motorists to the right gates. So that's an initiative that we're working on. And then we do have another CSOI allocation that we're expecting. That's the County Safety and Operational Improvements funding that the county receives. And so I do have a project, like a sight distance project that Mr. Dahl and I talked about, Route 6 and 659. I'm preparing to perform work there soon. But if you have any other project ideas that you'd like us to consider to use some of that CSOI money, please let us know so that we can perform some of that work across the county. And then lastly, the end, just the, we've got the land use and then our maintenance work. Zions and Palmyra have completed about 100 work orders so far just in the last 2 months. And so they've been hard at work, and I'm sure the next several days they'll be hard at work with storm cleanup as well. So we're thankful for all of their contributions. And that's it for the update. Are there any questions that you guys have for us or anything you'd like us to take a look at?
Bethel, I have a question.
Sure.
This is Patricia Eder. I had a constituent call me. She lives on 250, and she said that they're doing work on 64, and the trucks are going by her house and waking them up. Can you tell me what's going on? She said there are cement trucks are coming in the middle of the night down 250.
It might be there. 64, I guess it was a week or two ago, was getting resurfaced. So they were resurfacing 64 kind of west of the Zion's Crossroads intersection. So that might be it. I think I had heard that some of those asphalt trucks were coming down 250. Is that around the area that she lives in?
Yes, it is. She lives across the Fieldstone. So is that finished now?
Yes, they should be finished. And Alan, maybe if you know more, but I'm pretty sure they're done, but I can check in with them and make sure and reach out to you or that citizen to let them know exactly when they'll be done, if they haven't been done already.
Yeah, I realize that you can't ask them not to take 250, so.
Right.
It may also be the Diamond Interchange at exit 125, because there's a lot of dirt being moved there as well too. So they may be coming down 250 on 125, possibly.
Now, does this, these are crews and primary advice crossroad headquarters have responded to 100 work orders in fiscal year 22 or for fiscal year, we're not in 22, am I reading this wrong?
In fiscal year 22, so since July 1st, they've responded to 100.
That could be dead animals or moving trees. We've had a lot of storms.
That's kind of confusing.
Yes, ma'am. I will bring one thing up again. On Route 659, when you come down Route 659, they've got a sign up for 15 miles per hour. As you come across the roads coming into the township of Columbia, as far as the roads that are in Columbia, not Route 15, I mean Route 6 or 659. 659, I don't think should be 15 miles an hour. And also the curve that's up there right before you get to the stop sign, used to have a sign, warning sign about that curve, and somebody got that knocked down and never got put up years ago. So those two things.
Okay.
Like I said, people drive by that 15 mile an hour sign and never pay attention to it.
Right.
And Boston Road, again, Riverside Gate, I live there, so I experience it personally. I mean, I turn my head both ways, look both ways, and, you know, pretty much at least once a month, as soon as I turn back around, there's another car right on 250, and I'm usually maybe 2 seconds away from being hit. So it's an incredibly dangerous exit there for the speeds that are coming through that. And I know we've spoken about the fact that maybe that should be done through enforcement, but you know, it doesn't seem to be working. And we have had accidents there before, and one fatality for sure in the last 5 years. Maybe a rumble strip, you know, kind of just letting people know that heads up, if there's something else happening there, because there's a lot of traffic that goes out there.
Well, thank you for bringing it up. We'll definitely continue to monitor that location and look at different options for things that we can do, like rumble strips, like you mentioned. So thanks for bringing it up.
No, I think they come around the curve.
Yeah. Come out of it in a bus.
By the time you see the, because you look down, when you're looking down, you're looking at the trees before the curve, so you never see the car. And then you turn and look to the right, and then you turn to look to the left, and the car is just kind of behind the trees. And, you know, if you're not careful, it's easy to make that one.
All right.
I can tell you, I'll second that because I've driven a bus out of there before. That is no fun coming out of those two intersections if you're in a bus.
Thanks for bringing it up. We'll definitely take a look at it. It's a problem area. So we definitely need to do something. So we'll talk to our traffic engineers and work up a plan for how we can mitigate the concerns there.
Thank you.
All righty, any other things? As always, thank you guys so very much for all you do.
Thank you, have a good night.
You too, dear. G, Thomas Jefferson Planning District 2022 draft.
Dear?
It's draft legislative.
An old Southern charm.
Agenda. Dominique, I'm sorry, Dominique.
Lovarada.
They got me messed up here.
Lovarada.
I can't pronounce yours. You go right across yours. Mountain's got me going sometimes.
For those who don't know me, my name is Dominique Lovarada. I'm a planner and legislative aide at the PDC. David Blunt hired me about 2 years and 2 months ago, so I've been with the PDC for a little bit while now. But this afternoon, or I guess this evening, we're going to be doing a little bit of an overview of our legislative priorities and then the legislative regional program for 2022 as well. But as always, I want to start off and say it's always a pleasure when the PDC gets to work with Fluvanna County or any of the six localities that we represent, and coming to our Board of Supervisors meetings always a reminder. So we'll just dive right into it with our legislative and budget update. We've had a really busy year in the General Assembly, as I'm sure you can imagine, given COVID and a lot of the economic recovery bills that have popped up. We took a very short session in January, and then they added a little special session onto the end of that to sort of create a normal session for this odd year. And then the General Assembly just finished a very brief special session in August to appropriate about 75% of the state's ARPA funding, the Federal American Rescue Plan Act. And as you can imagine, it's been a pretty busy year in the General Assembly, lots of bills, lots of things popping up, but we're hoping to get everything through that we need to push our state through it, right? As for the development of the 2022 regional legislative program, last year, given that it was kind of an abnormal year, we sort of seized the opportunity, David and myself, to do a shorter legislative priority list, and that's available to you in the packet and as well as up there. And you'll notice that we took out a lot of the positions we've just had over the years that have been the same. And thank you to Fluvanna County for always helping with that and establishing what our positions are. But our top three asks or positions right now were all for money and tools regarding COVID recovery, our continuing position on state budget items, or including large items that pertain to public education funding. And then third, broadband, which I'm sure we all know is an incredibly pressing and important issue right now, especially for our children and our public school systems. I think one of the saddest stories I heard when sitting in meetings for legislators and lobbyists was hearing about families who have to drive out to McDonald's to take their kids to get Wi-Fi access to do homework when the public library is closed because they simply just don't have availability and where they are in such a rural locality. And so those kind of things really keep you going, and I'm always advocating for the expansion of broadband, and the PDC is working very closely with a lot of cooperatives to undertake that effort throughout the state. And we appreciate, as always, any feedback you have on any of the priorities or any things you'd like to have included in our program, our FY22 program. We'll look to make any required revisions or any changes in priorities that we hear from you and other localities in the region. And David and myself will do that and get a revised draft back to Fluvanna within the next month, at which point we can revisit y'all and then again in November and get your approval for the program. But at this point, I'm happy to take any questions or comments.
What is behind weather, tools and supplies and necessary maintenance, safe and effective? Okay.
Might need to scroll down a little.
Okay.
As you'll notice, there are just three sections there, covering communities, budgets, and funding and broadband. As you might remember, we typically have a several page long document that David especially spends a lot of time working on parsing through, and I help him do some of the background bill research. But this year, as I mentioned, it was a special or abnormal year, and we just thought we may as well tackle these three primary issues and not really overwhelm the packet with things that we typically are consistent on. I'm happy to answer any questions. Or David, if there's anything in the grass.
I don't know if this is covered adequately in there, but at the VACO convention, with the board of directors and everyone else, the biggest thing we had issues with, and it did not matter the size of your locality, and I don't know if they're included in SOQ positions or not, is bus drivers. Mm-hmm. It does not matter the size of the locality. And RICO was over 100 bus drivers short. Fredericksburg literally was going out to fire and rescue, trying to get people to drive fire trucks to come drive school buses. So if we could put something in there, some kind of pressure on them, to add that in if it's not already. I'm not familiar with what are and what aren't SOQ positions.
Yeah. I don't believe that's an SOQ position, and I think but I know that we had some times in the past where when we talked about funding for positions, we've gone ahead and enumerated certain ones, guidance counselors, etc. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a great idea, given what we've seen here the last couple of weeks in your discussion.
I can tell you right now, it did not matter. I mean, Fairfax on down to the smallest county in Southwest Virginia, everyone is in dire straits. I mean, in fact, in the larger cities, they just sent out messages and said, sorry, you got to get your kids to school any way you can. We're not providing a bus driver. If you listen to our radio, I mean, they're pulling everybody they can out of the woodwork to go drive a bus that they can get to drive a bus. And you have people driving three and four routes a day. So if there's anything we can any way we can add that in? We're 10 bus drivers short. We only have 69 routes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's what pulling everybody they can to drop them.
But we haven't had this magnitude of
no
shortage of drivers, but we've always had it.
We've always been short on it, but it's never been this bad that you couldn't find it. And I mean, yes, partially because of COVID, but the biggest thing is pay.
Yeah, it's pay.
And that's why I say, if they're only going to give us money for SOQ positions, without a doubt, bus drivers should be mandated as SOQ positions.
We'll definitely add that in.
Without a doubt. Because if you don't get them to school, you're not getting them done.
Ms. Booker, I'm not sure that I heard your specific question. I think it may have had to do with the tools and supplies related to education.
No, I didn't see, we didn't see all of the whole slide.
Oh, okay.
It is cut off, and that's why I wanted the public need to see the whole slide.
Yeah, I like shortening it up. You don't want to cover them up and stuff, because then they stop reading. I mean, I hate to say it that way.
Sure.
You know
absolutely
that they do. But if we could get a special bullet in there somewhere, just saying, especially with the crisis on bus drivers around the state.
Yeah, I'll use an analogy. I know a couple of years ago, in some of the other counties in the region, about law enforcement funding, and I think even particular to the state police funding, which always a supplement to your local sheriff's department and law enforcement in the county. And I remember we could add that specifically
yes
as well. So I think this is a great time to add that. Sure.
They're short every place.
That's what I'm saying. It didn't matter the size of your locality. Everybody that walked through that room was fussing just about the lack of this. Anyway, we're going to try to give you some help.
Great.
At the Bankville level.
Are there any other questions from the board members?
Thank y'all so much for all you do. We do appreciate it. G, Thomas Jefferson Plan HUD. Never mind, we just did G. I got to put the check. H, ARPA, uses presentation, Ms. Toller.
Yeah, we wanted to do a quick presentation for you guys just to discuss what can and cannot be used with the ARPA funds, the American Rescue Plan Act funds. It's important to keep in mind, the paper that she just handed out to you is a quick reference guide that the Treasury put out. I'm not really going over that tonight, but a lot of the information is in there, so you guys can hang on to those. It's important to remember that the American Rescue Plan Act is a huge act, and there's only a very small, relatively small portion of it that actually applies to counties and government. So that's what we're going over, not the entire thing, just the information that will apply to us.
Before you finish, Mr. Chair, I just have a question. I've read through how many things that do we have staff to be able to handle all what we do, what we are capable of spending the money for? Because there are a lot of things we can spend the money for.
There is a lot
do we have
money for.
You almost need a person just, and this money is going to be with us until 24.
A provision in there that you can use some of the money to for administrative costs.
Mm-hmm. I saw that.
Yeah, there is that provision in there. I don't necessarily know, and maybe Mr. Dahl's the one to answer that. I don't necessarily know that we would really need an additional person for what we need it for.
Have a lot of money to spend, we need more people to spend all this money.
But this is a lot of this, people don't even know anything about it unless you have somebody to.
One thing about it is we got 3 1/3 years to spend $5.3 million. I think we'll be able to figure out how to spend $5.3 million in 3 plus
years.
I'm sure we'll be able to.
I'm not sure. I'm still almost feel pushed.
I can't believe you would push.
I've been pushing 2 or 3 years for the nursing home to see one again.
It's a lot of information. So to begin with, as y'all know, it's a total of just over $5 million given to us in 2 installments. One we got in June of this year. The next will be a year out, so it'll be June of next year. Next page. First, I want to go over what we cannot spend it on, and these are items that are very clearly ARPA's. We cannot spend on these items. Contributions to rainy day funds, financial reserves, similar funds, tax cuts, any payments of interest or principal on outstanding or new debt, fees or cost of issuance on new debt, a settlement, judgment, decree, or judicially confirmed debt. Not on general infrastructure outside of water, sewer, and broadband. And for general economic development or workforce development, that unless it directly addresses the negative impacts of the public health emergency. Next page. So ARPA funds can be spent in 5 different categories, and we'll go through each of these a little more. Supporting the public health response, addressing the negative economic impacts caused by COVID, replacing lost revenue, providing premium pay for essential workers, and the water and sewer infrastructure and broadband. Next page. It's really slow in here. So in regards to supporting public health response, this is to fund mitigation efforts, medical expenses, behavioral health care, and other county public health, public safety, human services, and other related staff. And that'll go back to that premium pay we'll talk about in a little while. Some of the examples of the mitigation effects are the PPE, vaccine programs, enforcement of health orders, and investment to facilities to address COVID-19 concerns. As far as addressing negative economic impacts, this is to address harms to workers, families, small businesses, and impacted industries, as well as rehiring of public sector employees. Under this section, the general focus of the investments has to be to address the economic harm resulting from COVID-19. Next.
Yeah, so that, just to go back to that one, you know, like, for instance, if which we didn't have to do, if Paladi had to get rid of a bunch of staff or lay staff off, this would be a way for localities to rehire their staff.
Right. We didn't have any of that issue, so. Replacing public sector revenue loss to use funds to provide government services to the extent of the reduction in revenue experienced during the pandemic. This does not apply to Fluvanna because we did not have a net loss in revenue. And then the premium pay for essential workers. That offers additional compensation up to $13 an hour in wages to both county employees and other essential workers in the community who have faced and continue to face the greatest health risk due to what they do.
Why couldn't bus drivers be added to that list?
I don't know why they couldn't be.
I mean, it says education as well.
Right.
And obviously they're at great risk because they're exposed to a large people in a very small area.
And we'll talk about that a little bit more on that. What that definition actually is anybody who comes in regular contact, who touches things other people touch on a regular basis. So somebody working from home or working in a closed office may not apply for that, but somebody who is dealing with kids, with public, dealing with people on a regular basis would.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, one thing I was just thinking of too, I know Mr. Weaver had the question, I don't know if it was last board meeting, the board approved $1.4 million of a supplemental appropriation for schools, and a lot of it had to do with ESSER funds, and I think some of it maybe had to do with ARPA funds. I don't know if it would be helpful at some point, because like the county, the tools are also getting their shares of federal stimulus money that they used for and can use for certain things. I don't know if it would be helpful at some point to understand what some of those pots of monies are and what can they use it for. Like I said, I mean, I can certainly reach out to Dr. Gretz if that's something the board would be interested in.
Definitely. I think that's the point that I guess I'm trying to make. We need to reach beyond administration, not only the schools. We need to reach these nonprofit organizations, reach into the community and see what they're facing. And you cannot do it in the finance office or in the administrative office. You've got to go outside and pull in other people to see where the needs are.
You can go on to the next page. And then, of course, we have the water, sewer, and broadband infrastructure. And that has a lot, again, to do with the clean drinking water, getting broadband to those areas of the county that are underserved or are not served at all. And that's pretty open, pretty broad.
Yeah, broadband, you can take it to right in the house. But if you don't have the money to pay for it, it does you no good. So we're talking about just putting broadband into underserved areas, and I see things there. But people, if you can't afford to, they're not doing you good. So that's another thing we need to spread a little bit beyond just saying we're putting all our county at broadband.
Next page. So going back to the public health and economic impacts, and this is a real important statement to keep in mind when deciding in those areas what money you're going to spend. According to the interim final rule, to assess whether a program or service is included in this category of eligible uses, a recipient should consider whether and how the use would respond to the COVID-19 public health emergency. Assessing whether a program or service responds to the COVID-19 public health emergency requires the recipient to first identify a need or negative impact of COVID-19, and second, identify how the program or service or other intervention addresses the identified need or impact. While COVID-19 public health emergency affected many aspects of American life, eligible uses under this category must be in response to the disease itself or the harmful consequences of the economic disruptions resulting from COVID-19. So that's real important when you're talking about those two areas that you can spend the money in. It has to address COVID-19, and it has to be in response to COVID-19. The next page. And again, another list of examples, preventing and mitigating the COVID-19 would be the vaccination program, and that includes staffing, equipment, and so on, testing, monitoring, contact tracing, supporting isolation and quarantine, paid sick and paid family leave because of COVID-19, public health surveillance and data system enhancements, case monitoring, vaccine uptake, tracking, enforcing health orders, medical response expenses, including including emergency medical transportation related to COVID-19, communication efforts, and purchase of PPE and disinfection for public health or public areas. Next page.
So, just a quick question, because we've had this discussion. Since it specifically lists transportation, why wouldn't ambulance be counted for that?
Well, if we needed a new ambulance because of COVID-19,
we're going to need two new ambulances next year.
And we have to have.
Because of COVID-19, not because they're up for replacement.
Because we have to have backups available. to me, that's it would be related to COVID.
And you might get away with that with adding ambulances to what you already have. You wouldn't get away with that with replacing equipment. And that's what I'm trying to say. If you're adding something because it's you know, COVID-19 and we need the additional because we're gonna put more trucks on the street because we're responding to so many COVID calls, et cetera, you can make that argument. Go ahead.
Yeah, just going, you know, if we had, and I don't have the number, but like, you know, we had 100 calls one month, but now we have 200 calls
right.
next month. Well, so that makes sense that we've got an increased capacity due to COVID-19. So from that, I think you could simplify that, but
yeah.
I'm not so what, that's...
What do we have statistics on what our COVID cases are that are where we're facing responses from? And maybe that's something that
I don't know the answer to. We can get the answer to.
Yeah,
it.
That's why you need some.
Now I will tell you.
Just real one thing I'll add here real quickly that if you have we have 3 ambulances total right now. Is that correct?
With the
Lake has 4.
Yeah, the Lake has 4, and Palmyra has 3.
Okay, so we've got 7 ambulances. So if you had a 20% increase of cases due to COVID, right, that would certainly justify getting another ambulance, just mathematically, right?
Well, and that would depend on what those numbers were and whether it was being handled with 7 ambulances, whether we're getting 7 ambulances on the street, whether we're getting, you know, there's a whole argument behind it that you would have to make in the end when they end up coming to audit us. And if you can make sense out of that argument, you know, great, you know, that's going to be on the board's decision to make. But you have to be able to defend it.
No,
I think,
go ahead, please.
I think going to that, how many times do you have all 7 ambulances out that you would need additional capacity of ambulances?
Right. I will also tell you that we reached out. I have the list right here. We reached out to Goochland, Louisa, Buckingham, Albemarle, Green, and Orange, and absolutely none of them are buying apparatus with ARPA funds. Not one of them.
Just since it's specifically listed medical transportation,
mm-hmm.
It would seem like there's. I mean, I guess maybe if you're looking at an urban area, maybe the higher density,
mm-hmm.
perhaps. But I mean, from what I understand, that and I don't know if this is still the protocol that, you know, once you've made a transport with the COVID patient that you have to go ahead and, you know, sort of
take it out of its response. They are supposed to disinfect. That disinfection process, because of the machines we bought with the CARES money, takes 10 minutes.
Yeah, and that would be different.
Right.
I mean, I think, again, you would almost...
That's what I was told.
It takes 10 minutes to spray it. But then you have to let it sit for an hour and a half to 2 hours for it all to dry.
And what I was told by the RT at Palmyra, and again, just what I'm told, I'm not the one doing it. What I was told by them is that it takes about 10 minutes. They put the spray inside of it, they close it up, they leave it for 10 minutes, and they're done. So again, that's just what the RT is.
And they're right. With the spray, they're done.
Mm-hmm.
But the truck is not back in service in 10 minutes.
Yeah. I'm just telling you what I was told. But they closed the door for 10 minutes and they're back in the truck, is what they said to me. And that's why I said 10 minutes, because that's what was said.
And I would suspect that, I mean, it isn't. You could come in and say, okay, well, we have 7 ambulances, they're all 7 in use at one point in time, because obviously you need to have emergency response vehicles ready for different types of emergencies in different parts of the county to meet response times. So, you know, you can't just say, okay, you know, we've got 7 ambulances, but we're only using 3 at any given time. I think you'd have to look at it really from, you know, the positioning of the vehicles at a particular point in time.
But you also have to have the caregivers on the ambulances as well.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. All right. Let's go ahead and let's finish the presentation.
Next page. Is it going to the next page?
No.
What is the current contact tracing at the schools? What are the current contact tracing tools that are being used at the schools?
In the schools, I do not know.
See, that's where when you look at that page with this map, you need a person to monitor them. You all don't know.
We are doing the best that we can.
No,
we're,
I'm not criticizing.
Yeah. No, I know you're not.
We have a health department, and I know we have a part-time nurse. I know nurse.
Some additional uses for it are improving design and execution of those health and public health programs, and the other big one to note is addressing disparities in public health outcomes. In recognition of the disproportionate impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic on health outcomes in low-income and Native American communities, and the importance of mitigating these effects, the interim final rule identifies a broader range of services and programs that will presume to be responding to the public health emergency when provided in these communities. And that has to do with the census tracts, and that would require a lot more research than I have been able to do to give you more information on that. But that is a thing we need to look closer into.
Well, the one thing I can tell you, Fluvanna County does not have qualified census tracts. There are a few qualified census tracts within Charlottesville, but currently Fluvanna does not have it.
Okay. So the next page. And then we go on to the premium pay. And the premium pay is to provide that additional money to people who are in the public risk, heightened risk areas. And basically it's to target those people that are due to the character of their work, defines the essential work as work involving regular in-person interactions or regular physical handling of items that were also handled by others. And premium pay means you can go up to an additional $13 an hour in wages, up to not to exceed $25,000 a year per eligible worker. And the next page.
How long does that $13 stay there, though? I mean, once the event is over, does it go back then?
It can only be used while we're dealing with COVID.
Okay.
And that would be something the board would have to look at as whether you change those pays permanently, you put a stipend, because, I mean, we have done that before with stipends, and that would be more for HR and Mr. Dahl to decide how to implement, if that's something you wanted to do. And the next page. Now, payroll expenses, this was something that we did use quite a bit of the CARES money for, and it's a little bit different with the ARPA money than it was with the CARES money. This does say that they'll support payroll and covered benefits for the portion of the employee's time that is dedicated to responding to COVID-19. Now, again, if you look back at the last rule, it tells you anybody who's spending time with other people, touching things other people are touching, they're going to consider them responding to COVID-19. So it's kind of a gray area there. You know, you read that and it's real specific, and then in another section it tells you how broad you can look at it. So there are some contradicting areas there.
Do any of our employees receive this pay?
Not right now, no. That would be something that the board would have to direct. And I believe that was the last page. Are there any questions that we can answer that we didn't go over for you guys?
I mean, we're thinking that we could use the payroll enhancement there for bus drivers. But we can't do that. The schools need to do that.
I would think that you would need to look first at the schools, what they're getting and what they will have. Now, it does say that not only can we pay that additional to county employees and public employees, but that we can give grants to nursing homes, to, you know, anybody else who qualifies that, for them to pay their employees the same, that additional $13.
We would still presumably be just prevented from giving a grant to the schools for that purpose.
Yeah, that I couldn't answer for you. That would probably be something Mr. Dahl would have to answer.
I'm sorry, Mr. Dahl, are you saying can we give money to the schools for the pay their drivers extra?
Yeah.
I would probably imagine you could. I guess one of my questions would be is, do they ARPA funds, and what are they using for ARPA funds?
Well, of course. I mean, I'm assuming they don't have that. But.
Yeah, that's where I would start, is asking that question, right. And then I don't see any, like I said, it says we can give it to private industries. I don't see why we wouldn't be able to give it to our own school employees.
I mean, last time we gave money to the schools for other things. So yeah, I mean, I certainly think that the board could certainly choose to give the money to the schools if they have a bona fide, ARPA fund eligible youth.
Yeah.
You know, the fan mail that Kelly sent out this week had more information in it that I probably sent it to over 100 and some people, because we do not have that kind of communication in the community. So that whole thing about COVID and the mitigation, we can't depend on Blue Ridge Health District to come out here and do the things. We have COVID going rampant on one road in my area. Everybody is getting, now people are beginning to get the vaccination because they're seeing their loved ones get it. But we don't have, because we're not in church, so that communication is gone. People don't look at they don't look at fan mail on their phones unless I send it to them. So there are ways that we need to be able to read. This thing is not going away as quickly. We're still in it. And we just, you know, the health department is doing some things. People that need the third shot, I didn't even realize the third shot was being given until I just knew somebody else who signed up for today to get theirs. And if I hadn't known that, and then Kelly put it in her fan mail. And so some way we need to do, I've been saying we need a nurse, and the nurse needs some help. We need to be going out in the community, the elderly people. Java does a good job with people, elderly people, but we're missing out on a lot of areas. And if we didn't have those two clinics that we had at Carriage Brook, a lot of people would not have gotten the shots. And that was a community person pushed forward with Blue Ridge. So when I read through it, I could just see all these non-profit people not knowing how we're there and how we can help. You know, we gave grants with the other ones. You can do grants with this. Mm-hmm. Who's going to put out the order? We don't have an economic development person now.
That's true.
Anyway.
Any other questions we can answer?
All right.
Thank you very much.
I guess one thing for the board, I mean, is there anything from, you know, some indication from the board as a whole that you want staff to look into specifically as it relates to the ARPA funds? I mean, I certainly heard Ms. Booker, you know, and maybe I don't want to confuse what you're saying. Are you looking for like a county outreach person or something like that, Ms. Booker?
Yes, and I think when I mentioned it before, I was told that it's very difficult to find nurses, RNs, or LPNs in that capacity. And I know there are some school systems in the Tidewater area that use school nurses to help get the word out and be a sounding board and find out what's going on in the communities.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, we had success with our programs that we did for supporting businesses and nonprofits as well, whether it was grants or loans. Sounds like we can still do that as well, too, and so we might want to consider that if things, you know, continue to stay. I'm assuming that there's going to be more and more challenges for businesses to stay open, so I would suspect you might see that coming up.
And Eric, we cannot continue with getting a meeting room that we were working on down by the old fire department. We've just vacated that. We can't stay in the Performing Arts Center because our building, the administration building, won't probably be due until 2015. Is that what we're thinking about, a permanent place at the Performing Arts Center?
Well, I'm honestly not. I'm a little bit in the pinch here because, you know, we've been pushed out of the courthouse. You know, yeah. We've got the, and Cindy's trying to get some programs going back at the library, so it's you know, becoming a little bit of a hassle there. You know, the Performing Arts Center too, it's a hassle to do it in there too. No matter which way we go, there is not a good option for us. You know, going back to the basement option that you spoke about, could we complete that and could that be a temporary space to accommodate us because we've been kind of pushed out due to COVID? I think there's, you know, there's maybe some room for that argument, but I don't know. I would have to run that by our auditors a little bit and see what others are doing.
My only thought for that is you're talking about a temporary fix, and we were talking about how much that would cost to do that space. That's a lot of money to spend temporarily, and what use would we get out of it afterwards?
But the courts could use it. I mean, it's still a space where the community can use it. There is no space, I don't think, that you can say would just be there. Nobody would use it. You would want it to have a life and a purpose. If you can't find that, then I agree. No, don't do it.
If you need that, I'd rather do a building.
Mm-hmm. Are there any additional spaces to rent in the area?
How about the old courthouse? Like, what, we were going to use that.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So we were looking at the old courthouse, and there's, again, it's not available. It's not very public friendly.
No.
You know, it's not a great space to get it. It doesn't have facilities. And again, you know, it's probably no different in size than where you are at the library right now. And so maybe for most time that's fine. But, you know, as we're kind of getting into this, you know, I hate to say it, that we're kind of maybe I'm a little skewed right now since I'm COVID positive. But you know, as seeing kind of what has transpired, you know, to be honest, you know, being someone that was fully vaccinated, you know, I don't want to say, you know, I felt that I was not likely to get it, but I'm sure surprised I have it, that's for sure. So, you know, I am a little concerned on where does this go next, and you know, what's that look like from one, just, you know, in person, you know, the size of space that we have, it's a challenge, trust me. You know, staff, we talk about it all the time. We are just out of space, and then for the board, I feel like we're on a traveling roadshow sometimes, just because we're just moving from place to place to try and have a permanent space. If there was a way I could somehow get a some type of prefab Parks and Rec building, multi-use building built, I think that would be the best of all worlds. because I think there would be a use of it from a meeting space standpoint, but then, you know, there's certainly a longer term use of it. You know, unfortunately from the county building area, you know, where we're anticipating doing anything for the DSS and admin building area, I mean, you're talking a lot of time, you know, and we're moving forward with trying to get a design, but you're talking a lot of time for site development, clearing land, timbering the land, design, doing all that. You know, it's potential. When we had these discussions early on, when we were looking back at, do we renovate the basement of the admin building, or do we try and build some prefab building elsewhere? You know, maybe if, but we have to see how we could tie. Maybe if there was a way to somehow tie it to a Parks and Rec building, maybe that's the best bet. If it's some prefab building that could be built, you know, in more of a quick manner. But you know, we are struggling to figure out where we are going to be long term for our meetings.
Understand.
Alrighty. Are there any questions?
Nope.
Alrighty. Now we'll move forward with the consent agenda. First up is minutes of August 18th, 2021. J, Raymond James contract extension, Ms. Toller. K, FY21A to localities funding fire department, Tori Melton. L, CRMF, courts building, water lines, Mr. Kreitzer. And M, CRMF, Pleasant Grove House, HVAC replacement, Mr. Kreitzer. Is there anything we need to pull?
No. No figures in there.
No figures. No figures. No figure, no figures.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
I move that we approve the consent agenda, I through M.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion's made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion, that is the consent agenda. We move forward with unfinished business. Is there anything? Okay, seeing none. Is there any new business? All right. Seeing none, I'll now open the second round of public comment. Anyone wishing to address the board? Please state your name and address. Keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and directed to the board. Is there anyone who should speak at this time? Ms. Harris?
There's no one on Zoom.
There's no one on Zoom, no one in the room. I will now close the second round of public comment. Mr. O'Brien.
Mr. Chair, I move the Savannah County Board of Supervisors and enter a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A7. Section 2.2-3711A8 of the Code of the Mid 1950 is amended for the purpose of discussing litigation and legal matters.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion's been made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We're now in closed session.
Mr. Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned to the Savannah County Board of Supervisors to meet in an open session. Be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify to the best of each member's knowledge one only public business matters lawfully exempted from the open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711A of the Code of the 1950 as amended, and two, only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened, were heard, discussed, and considered in the meeting.
Second.
Motion's made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Bolton? Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. We are now in a closed session. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So made.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We are now adjourned. See